Welcome back, Deep Divers. Today, we're going to tackle something pretty unique.
Yeah, this one's really cool.
We're diving into the book of Deuteronomy.
Always a fun one.
But we're not just reading it.
Yeah.
We're going to look at how it's structured and get it's surprisingly similar to like ancient treaties from the Near East.
It's wild, right?
It's like discovery a part of the Bible was written like some kind of political agreement, you know?
Exactly.
So for this deep dive, we're turning to a lecture by Dr. Robert Van Oort.
Oh, he's great.
He breaks down this whole treaty structure thing, and it's going to help us figure out what it all means. Like, why is Deuteronomy written like this, and what does that tell us about its purpose?
Yeah.
What was going on back then?
All great questions. And one of the most fascinating things about Deuteronomy is this theory. It was put forward by a scholar named Meredith Klein.
Okay.
He argues that Deuteronomy, the whole book, it's laid out just like these ancient suzerainty treaties.
Yeah, I gotta stop you right there.
Yeah,
suzerainty treaties. That sounds a little complicated.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Did you break that down for me and for our listeners too?
Okay, so basically imagine you have this powerful king.
Okay.
He's the suzerain.
The suzerain, got it.
And he makes a treaty with like a smaller, weaker state.
Hmm.
The suzerain, he sets all the terms of the agreement, kind of like a landlord setting the rules for, you know, their tenants.
Okay, so I'm starting to get the picture here. So you're saying Deuteronomy is like God's acting as this king, the suzerain, and he's laying down the law for the Israelites.
That's the basic idea. And here's what's really mind-blowing. Both these ancient treaties and Deuteronomy, they share all these common elements.
Like what?
They follow the same structure, almost like a template.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Okay, you got me hooked. Walk us through it.
Yeah.
What are these elements? Let's see how close Deuteronomy really is to these ancient political documents.
All right, so first you've got the preamble. It's like a big, fancy introduction.
Yeah.
And in Deuteronomy, this is where God is introduced. You know, he's the ultimate great king making this agreement.
So it's setting the stage, introducing the big player right off the bat, God. But wouldn't the Israelites already know who God was? I mean, why this whole introduction?
That's a great point. But you got to remember, these ancient documents, they were kind of ceremonial, too. It wasn't just about information. It was about reinforcing ideas that everyone already knew and creating, like, a sense of awe. So even though the Israelites knew God, this grand intro would have reminded them of his power, his authority.
Right, right. Okay, that makes sense. So what's next in this treaty outline?
Well, next up is the historical prologue.
The historical prologue, okay.
Basically, it's a recap of everything that happened before. You know, it's the story of God's relationship with the Israelites.
Like a history lesson.
Exactly. It reminds everyone how they got to this point. It's like, remember that time I, you know, brought you out of Egypt? Good times.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so setting the stage, reminding everyone where we've been, how we got here.
Exactly. It provides the context for the agreement. Then you get to the heart of it all, the stipulations.
The stipulations.
Yeah, this is where the treaty outlines all the obligations, what both sides need to do. You know, God and the Israelites.
Wait, hold on, both sides. God has obligations in this agreement, too. That's not how I usually picture, like, a covenant with God.
I know. It seems a little strange to us today. But back then, in these ancient treaties, both sides had responsibilities. The king, he wasn't just making demands.
Right.
He was also promising to protect the smaller state. And in Deuteronomy, you see that reflected in God's promises to bless and care for the Israelites.
Okay, so it's not just one-sided. God's got responsibilities, too. That really changes my perspective on the rules in the Bible.
Mm.
But how are these stipulations actually presented? Is it all very formal and legalistic?
Well, there's definitely formality to it. But the interesting thing is there are two types of stipulations.
Right.
First, you've got these general principles, like think big picture stuff. Love God with all your heart, that kind of thing.
Oh.
And then you get these really specific rules, super detailed, covering everything from worship to how you treat your neighbor.
So it's like, you get the spirit of the law, and then you get the, like, letter of the law, too.
I can
see why that would be important, you know, to make sure everyone's on the same page.
Absolutely. And this combo, broad principles and specific rules, it's something you see in both Deuteronomy and those old treaties. It makes the agreement super clear and comprehensive.
Right. I get it. So we've got the big intro, the history lesson, and the terms of the agreement. What else is packed into this treaty structure?
Well, any good agreement's got to outline the consequences, right?
Right, right.
That's where you get the curses and blessings. Obey, you're blessed. Disobey. And, well, let's just say there are consequences.
Yeah, the motivation factor. Right. Classic carrot and stick. You know, follow the rules, good things happen. Break the rules, not so good things.
It highlights how important it is to follow the covenant. Choices have real consequences.
Right, makes sense. So after the motivation section, what happens? How does this whole agreement actually become, you know, official?
That's where you have the covenant ratification.
The covenant ratification.
Yeah, it's the formal confirmation that everything's set in stone.
Like the signing ceremony, the official seal of approval.
Exactly. And finally, there's the succession arrangement. This ensures the agreement continues even when leadership changes. It's like planning for the future.
Wow. So that's the whole structure. We're seeing this remarkably similar pattern in both political treaties and Deuteronomy. That can't just be a coincidence, right? What do you make of these parallels?
Well, you can imagine all these similarities have caused a lot of debate among scholars.
Yeah, I bet.
Some think it means Deuteronomy was actually written much later than we traditionally thought. You know, maybe during a time when these treaty forms were super common.
Oh, so they're saying someone might have used this familiar treaty format as a model for writing Deuteronomy.
Exactly. And that raises a lot of interesting questions about, like, the origins of the text and how it developed over time.
Definitely.
But before we dive into those debates, let's look at what this treaty structure might tell us about how the Israelites saw their relationship with God. You know, how did the structure shape their understanding?
Okay, yeah, let's shift gears a bit and explore those deeper implications. Mm-hmm. Like, why should our listeners care that Deuteronomy might look like a political document? What does that tell us about what it meant back then and what it means for us today?
So when you look at Deuteronomy as this kind of covenant renewal document, it really reframes how we see its purpose. Mm. You know, it strengthens this idea of a continuous relationship between God and the Israelites. It started back at Mount Sinai.
Right.
And now it's being renewed, like reaffirmed as they're about to enter the Promised Land.
Oh, so it's like, hey, we made this agreement back then, but things have changed. We're at a new stage. Let's re-up, recommit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like a couple renewing their vows. Mm-hmm. They're saying, we're still in this, and here's what it means for us going forward.
I like that analogy. So this whole treaty structure is showing us how important that relationship is. It's more than just a set of rules to follow blindly, you know?
Right. And it helps us see that the laws in Deuteronomy, they're not just random commands.
Yeah.
They come from this deep bond between God and his people. It's like a response to God's love and faithfulness, you know, what he's already done for them.
Okay, that's a really important point. The laws aren't just about don't do this, don't do that. They're like flowing out of this ongoing relationship.
Exactly. And there's something else really interesting about this treaty framework.
Okay.
Deuteronomy talks a lot about loving God. But in these ancient treaties, love didn't just mean warm, fuzzy feeling.
Right, right.
It had a much more concrete meaning. It meant being loyal, obedient to the king, the suzerain.
So it's less about emotion and more about action. Mm-hmm. Like what you do.
Exactly. It's about proving your loyalty through your actions. Imagine you're a vassal king in one of these treaties.
Okay.
You wouldn't just say, oh yeah, I love the big powerful king.
Right.
You'd show your love by like paying taxes, providing troops when he asked. You'd uphold your end of the bargain.
So love in this context is about living out the covenant. Being faithful, taking action. It's not just words.
Exactly. And that sheds light on how the Israelites would have understood this idea of loving God.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just a feeling. It was about showing your devotion through obedience by being faithful to the covenant.
Okay, this is really making me rethink some things. But hold on. If Deuteronomy's structure is so similar to these treaties, how did that even happen? Did someone just like copy a treaty and make it about God?
Yeah.
Or what?
That's where things get really interesting. There are a couple of different ideas about how Deuteronomy ended up with this structure.
Okay.
Some scholars like Gerhard von Rad.
Okay.
He believed it reflects this ancient ceremony, maybe a festival where they renewed the covenant.
Oh, so they're picturing like this big event, a public ceremony where everyone comes together to recommit to God, like a national renewal of the vows kind of thing.
Yeah. Picture it. The Israelites gathering maybe every year, acting out the giving of the law, remembering their history, and recommitting to God.
Whoa, that would have been powerful.
Right. And the structure of Deuteronomy, with the preamble, the history, the stipulations, the blessings and curses, it could reflect the different parts of that ceremony.
Wow, that would make the covenant come alive for them. Oh. It wouldn't just be words on a scroll, you know?
Yeah, totally. It'd be a lived experience, something that really gets ingrained in your heart and mind.
That's awesome. It adds a whole other layer to how we understand Deuteronomy.
Right. It wasn't just some legal document. It was part of how they lived their faith. Mm-hmm. But of course, not everyone agrees with Von Rad. Meredith Klein, the scholar who first proposed this treaty structure idea, he argues that God intentionally chose this form, this treaty structure, to make the covenant clear to the Israelites. You know, he used something they were familiar with.
So it's like God speaking their language and meeting them where they are.
Exactly. But hold on, we're talking about using these literary forms to try and figure out history. Uh-huh. Isn't that kind of tricky? How can we be sure we're not reading too much into it? That's a valid concern. Using literary forms to make historical claims can be tricky, but it's not something we should completely ignore.
Right.
It's about finding that balance, you know? We have to acknowledge the limitations of the evidence, but we can still be open to the possibilities. The key is to look for a plausible Sitz im Leben.
Sitz im Leben. Okay, now you've lost me.
Sorry, it's just a fancy German term for, like, the historical situation that led to this form being used.
Oh, okay. So Sitz im Leben is, like, trying to figure out what event or occasion would require a document like Deuteronomy.
Exactly. What problem was it solving? What was its purpose in that time? It's like being a historical detective.
I like that. So what's the verdict? What do scholars think is the Sitz im Leben of Deuteronomy?
Well, there's a lot of debate about that, too.
Figures.
Some are hesitant to make any strong claims about the history, but others see the treaty form as evidence that Moses himself wrote Deuteronomy.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. Which would mean it's a lot older than some scholars think.
Mm-hmm. So we've got some scholars saying the treaty structure means it was written later, and others saying it means it was written earlier. It's like a big puzzle we're trying to put together. And we might have all the pieces.
Exactly. It's the nature of scholarship. There's always more to learn, and new evidence can change everything.
Right.
But even with all these different opinions, we can learn a lot by seeing how Deuteronomy is connected to these ancient treaties.
Yeah.
It helps us understand the context it was written in and how the Israelites understood its message.
I'm really seeing how this deep dive into Deuteronomy's structure is adding all these layers of meaning. We've gone from ancient treaties to festivals to questions about who wrote it and when, and it all comes back to this idea of covenant.
Exactly. And understanding that covenant is key to unlocking the heart of what Deuteronomy is trying to say. It's mm-hmm. not just about rules. It's about living in a relationship, one built on love, loyalty, and faithfulness. But how does this ancient covenant speak to us today? How can we relate to it now? Thousands of years later.
Okay, yeah, good point. That's the big question, right? We've looked at the history, the structure, all that. But what does it mean for us in the 21st century? Okay, so we've been on this journey through Deuteronomy. We talked about the structure, how it's like those ancient treaties, even those possible ceremonies, you know?
Yeah.
And what really struck me is how it all highlights that idea of a covenant. It's not just about following a bunch of rules. It's about this relationship, this bond between God and the Israelites.
Yeah. That's the heart of it. And that idea of covenant, it's not just stuck back in ancient history, you know. Yeah. The themes of covenant, grace, responsibility, they're woven throughout the Bible. They still matter today.
I get that, but it's still like ancient history, right? Help our listener bridge the gap. How does this covenant from so long ago speak to us in the 21st century? What can we take away from it for our own lives?
It's about finding those principles that go beyond the specific time and culture. You know, they're timeless, like take loyalty and faithfulness. Those were huge in those ancient treaties.
Right.
And those values, they're still just as important today, no matter what kind of relationship we're talking about. With God, with our families, our communities, you know.
So even though we're not living under the exact same covenant as the Israelites, those core principles still apply. It's about living out our commitments, taking our responsibilities seriously, no matter what.
Exactly. And Deuteronomy also talks a lot about justice and righteousness, right? Those ideas have a big impact on how we live, how we interact with the world around us.
So it's not just about being good in our own little bubble.
Yeah.
It's about letting our faith affect how we treat others, how we work to make the world a better place.
That's a crucial point. Deuteronomy challenges us to build a society where everyone's treated with fairness, dignity, compassion. It pushes us to live out our faith in a way that actually makes a difference.
That's a powerful message. It reminds us that faith isn't just what we believe inside. It's about actively doing something, making the world better.
Exactly. It's about putting those ideas of justice and righteousness into practice. And here's something to think about. What are the systems in our society that create injustice? How can we use what we learn from Deuteronomy to challenge those systems, to work for a more just and fair world?
That's a great question. It's a challenge for all of us, you know, to not just accept things as they are, but to really wrestle with these tough issues, to look for solutions that reflect, well, God's heart. You know, this deep dive has been really eye-opening. Deuteronomy isn't just an old book. It's a living word. It has something to say to us right now.
It's a testament to that lasting power of covenant, this ongoing relationship between God and us. It's a call to action, an invitation to live our faith in a way that transforms everything, our own lives and the world around us.
Well said. I think we've given our listeners a lot to chew on today. As always, we encourage you to keep digging deeper, keep asking questions. That's what the deep dive is all about.
And until next time, keep those minds engaged, those hearts open. There's always more to discover.